Okay, thank you. So, agenda item number four, the Mount Shasta Ski Park zone change, Z-21-10, and use permit UP-21-30, subsequent mitigated neg deck. Real quick, before I give a staff report, if anybody is going to have public comment, just to expedite, please grab a card, which can be found at the end of the desk over here, fill out your name, and then please give it to Miss Janine. Okay, so with that, staff report, please.
Do you want to put the presentation on? Is it on?
I'm sorry.
Is the PowerPoint presentation on?
Oh, are you ready for it?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. Hold on just a second.
Yeah.
We don't normally do PowerPoints, so I have to.
Yep.
It used to be common practice several years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bringing it back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's helpful.
Yeah. Especially with a large project, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hold on. It's trying to get me to select.
Okay. Hold one second.
Which one do you want?
Yeah, pull up the right item here. Pull it up.
All right. Good morning, commissioners. Haley Lang, Deputy Director of Planning. And this item we have before you today is known as the Mount Shasta Ski Park Ski Lift Extension Project. And so there is a slide deck contained in your staff report agendas for you all to follow along this morning. Next slide. So this item brings forth a three-part recommendation, including one, a zone change. So we're bringing forth a three-part recommendation for you all this morning. One is a zone change. Per our county code, any updates or amendments to a planned development zone has to go through the zone change process. Two, a use permit, approval of a use permit. So per our county code, planned developments which are multi-use or multi-phase in nature, a use permit is required for the additional uses. So this will allow for the construction and the use of the Great Butte Ski Lift project. And three, recommend to the Board of Supervisors to approve the mitigated negative declaration. So this is the CEQA document that is associated with the use permit portion of the project. Next slide. Project summary. So there is a two-part process, planning process for this project. The zone change, which amends the plan development and the associated master plan document. A few items I will highlight related to this change. The inclusion of the backcountry program. This is the long-standing program that the ski park has been conducting, so we wanted to integrate that use into the planning document to reflect that. The removal of development plans for Section 10. There's language within the old master plan that discusses, you know, purchase of Section 10 in order to develop Section 3. Those plans are no longer happening, so we removed that language. Also, some minor updates such as removing inconsistent language, formatting updates, and the removal of facilities and uses that are no longer planned or proposed. The use permit planning planning process, this is for the construction of the Great Butte Ski Lift, which is approximately 4,300 feet in length. This will lift the skiers from about 6,900 feet to 7,500 feet. So as I mentioned, there is a subsequent mitigated negative declaration that's been prepared by a consultant pursuant to CEQA for this portion of the project. And I just wanted to highlight here, the project meets all applicable findings associated with the general plan and zoning. CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. So, as I mentioned, the subsequent mitigated negative declaration was prepared. We're calling it a subsequent mitigated negative deck because there are prior certified environmental documents associated with Mount Shasta Ski Park. They have an initial environmental impact report, a supplemental EIR, so henceforth, while we're calling it a subsequent mitigated negative declaration. And so, how do you decide what kind of environmental document to prepare? So through the initial study process pursuant to CEQA guidelines, if there is found through the analysis that there are potentially significant impacts that can be mitigated, those revisions are made within the document, and so henceforth why we have an MMD that is prepared for this project. Next slide. So when we are conducting CEQA and analyzing the project, there's about like 19 or 20 different environmental areas that have to be analyzed and justified, and there is also certain questions that have to be answered through the each category, right, of the environmental area. And so these that you see up front on the screen, these are ones that have been analyzed that have no mitigation measures associated with them. So that means there's no impact, or there's a less than significant impact, meaning that there's no mitigation that is required for these. And so I'm not going to highlight those today. In the next slides, I'll be highlighting the environmental areas that have the associated mitigation measures with them. So aesthetics, you can see there's two questions on the screen, and so I'm going to discuss the questions that have the associated mitigation measures throughout the slides. And so for aesthetics, does the project create temporary visual impacts caused by construction activities? This was noted as potentially significant, but then reduced to less than significant with the inclusion of mitigation measure aesthetic one, which is describes that the project construction equipment and activities shall not be staged at or reach an elevation higher than the ridge of Great Butte, ensuring that the cultural sites of Panther Meadows and Mount Shasta will be protected from temporary visual impacts. So question two, does the project have a substantial adverse effect on a scenic vista? This was noted as potentially significant, reduced to less than significant with the inclusion of mitigation measure aesthetic two, which reads that the ski lift facility shall be constructed so as not to reach an elevation higher than the ridge of Great Butte, ensuring that the cultural sites of Panther Meadows and Mount Shasta will be protected from visual impacts. Environmental area, biological resources, there's three questions that have associated mitigation measures. The first one is, does the project have a substantial adverse effect, either directly or through habitat modifications on any species identified as candidate sensitive or special status in local or regional plans, policies, or regulations? So this was noted as potentially significant and reduced to less than significant with the inclusion of mitigation measures Bio-1 and Bio-2. Bio-1 includes the requirement of implementing a pre-construction and nesting bird survey, and Bio-2 includes the requirement of implementing timber harvest plant surveys and a protection buffer for sensitive wildlife species. Question two asks, does the project interfere substantially with the movement of any native, resident, or migratory fish and wildlife species, or with established native, resident, or migratory wildlife corridors, or impede the use of native wildlife nursery sites? This question integrates mitigation measure Bio-1 and Bio-2, but also additionally Bio-3, which includes the requirement of designated wildlife protection areas and a botany rare plant area as barred from mechanical entry. And question three, is there any conflict with any local policies or ordinances protecting biological resources? This has the inclusion of mitigation measure Bio-3, which reduces the impact to less than significant. Cultural resources, does the project cause a substantial adverse change in the significance of a historical resource? This has the inclusion of mitigation measure cultural one, which is actually mitigation measures aesthetic one and two, so reduces the impact to less than significant. For environmental area, geology and soils, does the project result in substantial soil erosion or the loss of topsoil? So noted as potentially significant and reduced to less than significant with the implementation of mitigation measure geology one, which includes the requirement for the ski park to adopt an updated erosion and sedimentation control plan that addresses erosion risk of the new and existing ski trail and roads during operational and non-operational seasons. For hydrology and water quality, so the question is posed, does the project substantially alter the existing drainage pattern of the site or area, including through the alteration of the course of a stream or river? And so with this noted as potentially significant, but decreased to less than significant with the implementation of mitigation measure geology one. And so similarly with land use planning, does the project cause a significant environmental impact due to the conflict with any land use plan, policy, or regulation? This is also integrating the mitigation measure. It's called land use one here, but it's geology one. Okay, so for the environmental area noise, the question is does the project create a generation of substantial, temporary, or permanent increase in ambient noise levels in the vicinity of the project in excess of standards established in the local general plan or noise ordinance or in other applicable standards? Noted as potentially significant, and with the implementation of mitigation measure noise one, decreased to less than significant, which is requiring that to schedule helicopter construction activities so as not to overlap with tribal cultural ceremonies occurring at Panther Meadows. Recreation, does the project include recreational facilities or require the construction or expansion of recreational facilities which might have an adverse physical effect on the environment? Noted as potentially significant, decreased to less than significant with the implementation of mitigation measure recreation one, which is implement the mitigation measures from the initial study and the MND. For the environmental area transportation, does the project substantially increase hazards due to a design feature or incompatible uses? Noted as potentially significant, decreased to less than significant with the implementation of mitigation measure transportation one, which is to require an overflow turnaround to be constructed just north of State Route 89 at the intersection to prevent vehicles from backing up onto the highway. The use of this overflow turnaround is triggered when the number of vehicles exceeds 1,955 vehicles in a given day. This is the threshold number of vehicles that's based on traffic count data from 2019 to 2022. And so once the intersection operational analysis is complete, adjustments to the vehicle cap may be made if justified. Tribal cultural resources, does the project have any listed or eligible listings related to the California Register of Historical Resources or any local registry? Noted as potentially significant with the, and then decreased to less than significant with the implementation of mitigation measure tribal one, which is implementing the mitigation measures aesthetics one and two. And so with all of that said, I wanted to touch on public comments. So throughout this process, we received over 600 public comments. A lot of stuff to read through. So I've categorized these next few slides in support and opposition. I will note that out of, you know, the 600 or so that I looked at, there was only like 7 or 8 in opposition. So overwhelming support for the project. And I just wanted to highlight on a few things, which, you know, to summarize the comment, the public comment in support. So folks mentioned that this project would create more accessible terrain, better recreation, there would be increased resource or resort enhancement, there would be increased tourism and local commerce benefits, increased quality of life. The ski lift would create maybe better competition for larger resorts within the region. There would be an increased jobs both in the construction of the lift but also in the use of the lift. The lift is important to the ski park's sustainability, and this project could potentially increase revenue and tax dollars. The opposition comments, I will note, I think most of these are accounted for in the mitigation measures that are contained throughout the MND document, but some concerns folks had were aesthetics, the overuse of water for snowmaking, the spiritual significance, and the cultural significance of Mount Shasta to local tribes. Noise and light pollution, wildlife concerns, deforestation, and one person had a concern about unpermitted logging. So, agency comments. So I wanted to highlight these two. They're contained in the staff report and the staff report package today. Caltrans, they actually wrote a formal letter, so that's contained in the public, or excuse me, the agency comment in the staff report. They are supportive of the project, but they recommended an operational analysis to be conducted to determine the capacity of the intersection. So I added that as a condition of approval in the staff report, that that be complete prior to the start of the upcoming winter ski season. CalFish and Wildlife, they are also in support of the project and noted that they were appreciative of the mitigation measures related to the nesting and migratory birds. So I just wanted to highlight that here. Public comment period, public hearing. So there's been some changes with CEQA law and noticing of environmental documents. And so this is just pertinent to the MND. A few months ago, it used to be that local agencies were able to post documents for 20 days locally. We didn't have to submit it to the state clearinghouse. Now we do. So now we have to adhere to state clearinghouse timelines. And so we actually have to allow for a 30-day public comment period and not a 20-day. And so I just want to note that at the time of this public hearing, right now, we are still within the public comment period for the CEQA document. It's still up in the state clearinghouse. So I just wanted to note that. I did want to note that CEQA doesn't require a public hearing for an MND. That's just for EIRs, and that's at the local, you know, the discretion of the local agencies. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I will note there are representatives from the Ski Park here today, and then also GeoServe, the consultant, should you have any technical questions.
We'll hopefully hear from them during the public hearing. Commissioner comments? Thank you for that report, too. Any commissioner comments for the staff?
I don't know, Kyle, but I was just curious of the ski season this year. How long did it last? And would this new addition have increased the time that skiing was allowed?
Okay.
And maybe that could be answered.
Okay, thank you. Any questions at this time, Mr. Bell?
Yes, and it's related to this project, but it's more related to process.
Mm-hmm.
This project area has already been approved as PD.
Correct.
And in order for this proposed addition to occur, we have to reapprove and re-verify that it is indeed PD. It seems odd.
Well,
why we have to do a zone change with no change. The key word being change.
Sure. So related to the zone change, there is an associated ordinance which was turned into a plan development master plan specific to this project. So the way the code reads is anytime there's any change, period, you have to go through the process.
So it's more a formality of reaffirming that yes, indeed, we still agree it
right.
needs to be designated as PD in order to issue a use permit,
sure.
et cetera.
Yeah, and account for anything new happening, right? So we had to include the ski lift is now within the plan development master plan.
Okay. It
take
just
out.
Seems odd that we have to go through the,
yeah.
a second zone change when
sure.
we're not changing the zoning.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think a part of it too is that we're also opening up a whole new section that wasn't directly considered before, Section 9, right?
Three.
I'm sorry, Section 3. And to that extent, it's certainly a somewhat significant change to the plan development which was previously approved.
And then was it zoned TPZ at all, the new addition? Was that, I saw something in here that it was zoned timber preserve? Or no?
Years ago.
Years
yes.
ago, but not currently. So it was TPZ to
mm-hmm.
PD, and now it's, okay, got
right.
it. So I just didn't catch that time element. So, okay.
Good. That
any,
was my question.
Okay. Any additional comments, Mr.?
Nope.
No?
Not now.
Mr. Hart? Okay, so with that, we will open up the project hearing. Are there any project proponents from the ski park that would like to address the commission? <Come on.
laughs> I guess I'll address the commission.
Okay, please state your name and your address.
Sure, my name is Jim Mullins. My address is 517 Grove Street, McLeod, California.
Thank you.
I've been affiliated with the ski park for approximately 15 seasons. I'm currently the general manager. This is something that's been on the forefront of the community for a long time. So number one question we get asked is, when do we get to ski Great Butte?
What?
When do we get to ski Great Butte, the public asks. The original PD that we're talking about had a real development. If you look at the history of the ski park from the forefathers and saw their illusions of grandeur, how they were able to develop this, it was all laid out originally. It's just been delayed over the process. They envisioned at one time picking up partial section 10, but that never came to fruition. So in order for us to go a little bit higher, give us a longer ski season, we have, to answer your question, Dusty, we had 84 days of skiing this year. We guarantee with our season pass 60 days. So we exceeded that guarantee.
So if the project had been this year, how many more days would it
I can't really gauge it right now, because if we could have kept it open till this last storm, we have a lot of snow up there right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then to answer some of the questions that were coming up there's no additional snowmaking in fact there. It's just a natural terrain around pumping water back there to make snow. All our snowmaking capabilities are on the lower levels where we struggle because of altitude. As we get higher, we have more snow. So as long as we can develop that snow at the lower altitude to get people on the lift and get folks to the back, then we'll be fine. The communities around us are very supportive. The economical impact to our local communities, be McLeod, Dunsmuir, and Mount Shasta, is really large. I mean, the majority of our 300 employees during the winter come from these areas, and they plan on that every year. So with this project, we're going to develop more jobs. We're looking at another 25 jobs, and with another probably 4 to 5 full-time positions during the year, which we have about 25 of those right now. So these are living wage jobs. If you guys watched the ski park this year, our entry-level wage was well above minimum. So everybody started there and went up from there. You know, we're trying to be a good steward there. We were trying to attract quality people to work there. And we all know the workplace right now, it's a struggle, mm-hmm. especially with housing. You know, in ski park, we're partnered with several agencies right now to work on workforce housing also. Our ownership group does own the KOA in Mount Shasta, so we house a lot of folks there within the cabins and their trailers to help the workforce that we're from out of the area. So we were looking for your support on this. This is something a long time coming. You know, it's been in the thoughts for a long time. The Below family has made the investment to move forward with this project and offer more to Siskiyou County. We'll attract more tourism. That puts dollars in our businesses' pockets. It increases the TOT tax, which we all depend on here in the county, and there's several levels of that. So we're just looking for your support on this, and hopefully we can mitigate all the problems.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Kurt Reichel. I'm associated with the ski park.
Excuse me, can you state your address as well, please?
P.O. Box 1116, Mount Shasta, California.
Thank you.
A point of clarification on this traffic study for the intersection. I'm not quite understanding of what it is we're asking before the next season. Is it something that would impede us from operating next year?
No, so Caltrans suggested and recommended a traffic study to be conducted to their standards, which is the operational analysis. This is for you to potentially exceed your current capacity, should you need to.
Our current capacity that was approved in 97 is 4,500 visits a day. With our expansion, we expect to be to 1,500. I don't know what that would do to exceed that. So is this study only kicking in if we exceed that 4,500?
It's if you exceed baseline, and I would recommend having Jim Fitzgerald come up because he spoke with Caltrans and has the kind of technical background information related to the convo for the operational analysis.
I
I'm Jim Fitzgerald, 2731 Friars Way, Mount Shasta, California. I'm a senior geologist at GeoServe Inc. We completed the CEQA study.
Yeah, so Kurt had some additional clarification questions related to the recommendation from Caltrans as to why they recommended the operational analysis when in the PD the capacity is 4,500.
That is based on the actual conditions of traffic at the intersection. So the Caltrans monitors accidents, records them, explains what happened, and so basically during peak use times, which are typically around the Christmas holiday, there's been days where traffic's backed up onto 89. You have a bunch of people using Snowman's Hill for sledding right across the highway from there, and it gets congested, and then it becomes a hazardous situation. So in order to prevent future accidents, improve flow of traffic, they've recommended this analysis that basically a traffic engineer goes in, studies the data that they have, and then provides recommendations for improving that intersection for the proposed increase in traffic for gradient lift. So we've started that analysis. We did a public information request from Caltrans, and we got all the data they have. And so, as we're going through this process, we'll be completing that analysis.
I've got a question related to this, though, and we have the expert here.
Can he come back?
He's already here.
Okay, go ahead.
Under current, the last couple of years' operation, has the attendance, participation at the ski park, ever exceeded the 4,500?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. So Caltrans, though, wants, because of activities outside the purview of the ski park taking place on the opposite side, creating congestion, am I hearing you say that Caltrans is wanting this study to be done based on the data you've collected to propose improvements to 89 that should be borne by the ski park, or will be borne by the responsibility of the state? Because if it is to be borne by the ski park, I've got a problem there. Because the ski park hasn't exceeded their approved daily attendance limit. The issue is with non-ski park attendees across 89 causing the congestion. And if that's the case, then the state needs to deal with that, not the ski park. And so could you offer clarification on your understanding? Do I have that assessment correct?
My understanding is that they provided comments November last year, I think, recommending this operational analysis. And it was just an email.
Simply an analysis, though.
Yep, and then there was a bunch of discussion about congestion. And then, so basically, we did our traffic analysis for this document. Parking capacity has not been exceeded. There was no days over 4,500. You gotta remember that, well, we assume 2.3 skiers per vehicle, so there's, you got to keep number of people and number of vehicles separate. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it wasn't exceeded. Subsequently, they wrote a letter of support for this project with really no required conditions, the way I understand it.
Just the recommendation, not a requirement.
A recommendation to do an assessment.
Correct, analysis, yes.
But the critical, this overflow turnaround, we're calling it, is the critical mitigation measure for traffic impacts. Mm-hmm. And that is a spot, which is basically already there. We just need to delineate it better. They hit their count in traffic December 27th. It exceeds 1955. They start turning people around to keep that intersection from getting backed up. And all the other issues with the Snowman's Hill, that's Caltrans' responsibility. And even if that analysis recommended improvements to the intersection, that would be on the state to design and implement, because they are the authority on highway, state highways.
How far is it from Highway 89 to the parking lot at the ski park?
89,
miles.
Probably
4.5 miles.
4.5.
The turnaround is located 2.25 miles from the intersection of 80. Ski park highway,
which
midway.
Totals to about 560 cars. At 2.3, you can do the math to calculate it into visits. I have a few comments that I'll make when Jim's done, and you're done asking him.
Yeah.
But just for clarification, if we can refer to condition number 7 within the packet, describes that the overflow area should be constructed prior to the lift. That is what is on the table to be required prior to the operation to conduct the new ski lift.
Okay. We'll discuss that after public proponent or public hearing.
So, who owns the property across the road? Forest Service. Snowman's Hill.
On Snowman's Hill.
Is Forest Service. Okay. And there's some Caltrans property there too.
Yep. We'll talk about it once the... Go ahead and make the rest of your comments, please.
With regard to the turnaround lane and stuff, a few years ago there was a FUPA, and we had people down at the bottom of the hill coordinating vehicles, and we realized that that was not a functional situation because people did end up backing out onto 89. So we moved this snow or vehicle inspection area 2 miles up the hill to where the cinder shack is, which allows us 2 miles of the ability to stack cars. That equates to about 38 or 39% of our overall vehicle capacity. Not talking about visit capacity, but vehicle capacity. And the other thing that we do, now that technology is caught up with the industry, we have real-time monitoring. We know on Thursday how many people we're going to have at the park over the weekend. Brendan could probably address that if we want to get into some of the specifics of it, but essentially we know. So then we can set up whatever monitoring we need to do to accommodate any of the vehicles and deal with that ahead of time. The real big problem here isn't our operation or our capacity, it's Snowman Hill. And with regard to that, Caltrans increased the access into Snowman Hill a few years back, and there's also a parking lot above the what you would commonly know as the lower parking lot. The ski park has, on occasions when we know we're going to have capacity, gone and removed the snow for that parking lot. We've asked Caltrans to take care of it because it's kind of in their purview relative to that whole operation. It seems to me that it's a little bit kind of redundant. We've had this thing in the 83 and again in the 97 plan, and with our operation and what we've done to accommodate the overflow of the traffic, we think has mitigated any of those issues. I think that providing a traffic study and the expense of that put on the ski park is something I would like the commission to take a good hard look at.
Thank you. Great, thank you. We'll come back to you if there's questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one more chance here.
Yeah, you may.
We've already mitigated a lot of the traffic issues at the ski park level. We were under a force which we met last year. We got authorization to build two new parking lots, which we've added to our parking lots. So now we have a total of 5 parking lots going down towards the hill between the ski park's lodge and the shop down below. This is on Forest Service properties that are Forest Service permit, and it's approximately 300 to 500 cars, depending on how good our parking crew does. We never, even with our big days this year, we never filled all those lots. So we have the capability of not having that traffic backed up. We have, with the proper parking staff that we have, and we're coordinating the parking, we have plenty of room to add those additional cars.
Great, thank you. Any other project proponents in the audience? We'll get to general public comments in a second. Any project opponent, or excuse me, proponents on the phone?
If you're calling into this meeting and you are a project proponent, please raise your hand. Seeing none.
Okay. Any project opponents in the audience? Seeing none. Could you find out if there's any on the...
I have one person raising their hand online, Michelle.
Okay.
Ask her to please state her name and address. Please.
Michelle, go ahead and speak, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead and make your comment.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Hold on just a second. Can you state your name and address for the record?
Yes, my name is Michelle Berdichevsky. I'm with the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center.
Can you please spell your last name for the record?
Certainly. It's B as in Barbara, E-R, D as in David, I, T as in Thomas, S as in Sam, C-H, E, V as in Victor, S as in Sam, K-Y. Did you get all that?
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm with the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center. We have a long involvement with the cultural district on Mount Shasta and with our local tribes. And I want to acknowledge that the ski park has been a good neighbor to the cultural district. And we appreciate the benefits that the ski park provides and the proposed project as well provides to our communities. By the way, I tried to fill out a comment card, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. I couldn't see where that happens. So I don't know if that makes any difference. I did have a question about whether comments received after this meeting will be considered in the same way as comments that are received by the state. The notice of intent had something confusing about comments have to be received by a certain time to be considered, even though the comment period goes through the end of the month. So that's one question I have. And going back to the project, we appreciate the mitigation measures, and we would like some clarification on the mitigation measures. One question we have is that there will be no lights. We just want a total reassurance that there will be no lights. Does that include the huts? Does that include the vault toilet? So that is one question we have. Another question is, how far from the ridge of Grey Butte will the lift go? What is the distance so that it won't be visible from Panther Meadows or from the cultural district? And a related question is, will there be anything preventing skiers from skiing down toward Panther Meadows. And I guess we're not answering the questions, we're just asking them. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. We're wondering if there are any Forest Service permits involved in this project. And then through our long work with the local area tribes, I would like a little bit more clarification on the consultation process that was used. Did they receive a specific letter about the project, or was it the same notice of intent that everyone received, and when would they have received the first notice about this project?
No.
What would the date be? Was it a different date than other interested parties? So those are my questions.
Great, thank you.
I don't know if there's any discussion or.
Yeah. We will have discussion once we close the public hearing. We've made note of these questions.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Oh, am I mic on? Mm-hmm. Can you hear me now?
A little better, yes.
Okay. Yeah, what I was saying is that we will address your questions during the public. Once the public hearing's closed, we'll bring it back to the commission and we'll have discussion.
Okay.
Great, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
If there are any additional opponents to this project that are online, please raise your hand by pressing *9. Seeing none. Okay.
Any other project opponents in the audience? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go to general public comments now. And those questions, everybody will have 3 minutes, and then I've got your names here, and we'll go in order. So first I have is George Jennings. And so, point of clarification real quick, Janine. Now that I have the card with their address, do we need to restate the name and the address into the record?
No, we don't have to do
that. Okay. So, yeah, just state your name. We have your address.
I'm George Jennings. I'm the Executive Director of the ORCAL Resource Conservation and Development Council and also the Volcanic Legacy Scenic Byway. ORCAL is a 5-county, 2-state nonprofit that stated in our name as development. We actually have been supporting the ski park and with a program called Siski Works to help with workforce development for this coming season, the last season. We are definitely in favor of sustainability of this business, and we see that this project is working toward that workforce stability, being able to keep the folks working longer and having a stable season for the workforce. Of course, and all the other mentioned benefits, the increased tax revenues, and increasing outdoor recreational opportunities. We also see the expansion as providing additional fuel reduction with the slopes being created. They'll actually have more opportunities for fire to stay on the ground and work in between the less where the trees are. So we want to really see this as a benefit. And also, wouldn't it be great if that was a county road? The county would take that on and add that into there instead of the current condition it's in because of the multiple landowners. I think add that to their revenue, the number of roads they cover. And I think there'd be a benefit also with more public transportation up there with the system, be able to bring the buses up there on the weekends also. I think they're addressing some of those things, but this is a key economic driver in the county, and we want to make sure it's around for a long time. And those economic and recreational benefits are just, as far as the byway goes, the 500-mile byway goes from Lassen National Park to Crater Lake National Park, and it goes around Mount Shasta. And we're spending a lot of time promoting the area and the things to do along the byway. The more things we have to do along the byway, the more stays people have, the more tax revenues, everything comes together. So having this viable business up there and being able to just have one more feature for us to promote is, we just see it as a great opportunity for this county to really compete. I always laugh when I hear people in Shasta County, you know, talk about their mountain, Mount Shasta, and it's, you know, it's not even in our county, it's our mountain, you know. Yeah, it's everybody's mountain.
Lassen.
Yeah, what's that?
They're talking about Lassen.
Yeah, they must be. But they send a lot of people up to the byway, so we just want to see that business to be there for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next speaker is John Kennedy.
Good morning. My name is John Kennedy. I live at 709 Rockefeller Drive in Mount Shasta. Born and raised in Mount Shasta. I have a business there. My son has taken over a ski shop, Sportsman's Den, and my father, he was very instrumental in a lot of the ski business that has happened in Mount Shasta. They called him Mr. Skibo at the time because he helped promote the original ski area up there. And my grandfather, Louis Larry, he came here first in McLeod, but in 1923, he had his own business in Mount Shasta too. We watched, and all of them have all been instrumental in the growth of Mount Shasta. At one time, it was the smallest community in the South County. Dunsmuir, McLeod, Weed were all bigger, had more people in their area than Mount Shasta did. About in the 50s, all of a sudden, everything started to take off for Mount Shasta. We had several things that had happened during that time. Through the 50s and 60s, we ended up having the ski area put in. I think it was around 1958-59, and that really promoted the area. We ended up having Lake Siskiyou put in and brought recreation during the summer that we didn't have before, and the housing started to grow, and we had a housing tract that was developed. And slowly but surely through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, we had continued growth. And the next thing you know, Mount Shasta was one of the largest towns in the South County, taking over for the other three towns down there. But anyway, back to the ski area itself. I've been in business for 50 years in the ski business itself, and I've watched what happens when the ski area wasn't there, when we didn't have snow, and how the revenues in the town all decreased and we were barely able to survive. Having this expansion that they're proposing now will not only help the economy, but it'll continue to make the town and the South County area grow. And I'm all in favor of you guys approving the ski park's permit and zone change. I don't know if there's anything else I can really add to that, but I hope you do the right thing and allow this to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Dick Cowardin?
My name is Dick Cowardin. I live in Montague, 370 South 13th Street. I'm here representing myself. As I understand it, the Cal Fire has approved the timber harvest plan. And a lot of these instances were posted on the board there, had to go through and be approved for the permit for the timber harvest plan. Also, the timber harvest plan calls for all adjacent owners to be notified of this project, which has been done. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been approved. This also will help the cross-country ski area that is just below the main lodge of the Mount Chester Ski Park. I'd like to mention the same thing that the gentleman just mentioned, that when the avalanche occurred in the old Mount Chester Ski Bowl in 1978, it had a devastating effect on South County, Dunsmuir, McLeod, Weed, Mount Shasta. With this approval going through and the park itself went into business, it improved that greatly. There were many businesses that were almost going bankrupt when the whole bowl shut down. Also, I'd like to mention that the Snowman Hill situation, as I understand it, the ski park paid to have a blinking yellow light installed at the top of Snowman's Hill. That had never been done. The state highway has not did that work, and we had a bad accident at one time, mainly because of that. So that needs to be addressed by Caltrans. Why that hasn't been installed in the first place, if in fact that is what happened. I'd like to thank the commission that I can express myself on the project itself. I also like to say that outdoor activity in this whole country has just overgrown, and we have a lot of crowding, and this would also help the tourism in Siskiyou County. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. This says Kurt. I don't have a last name, and it says maybe on a comment.
That's me.
And okay, so we'll
we're
hold.
Good. Thank
okay,
you.
So you're there. Okay. Okay. I put my glasses on. So the next one is Jim. A Y E E.
Jim Air.
Oh, it's E-R, air. Okay, got it. They know how to do this. I see the R now. Sorry.
Yeah, my name is Jim Air, 1434 Air Lane, Mount Shasta. And Tony Mello probably remembers when we hauled snow down to the state capitol, dumped loads of snow down there, working to get a ski area going again on Mount Shasta. You see, the environmentalists had agreed to 2,000 acres of multi-use land on Mount Shasta for another ski area. And then they began fighting us, then fighting us, and fighting us. And I praise God that these guys are here today trying to get things going. We're still going through battles and garbage again. But I hope that, you know, you can get this going before I can't get on a lift anymore. And, you know, John, you talk about the businesses of Mount Shasta. I've been in meetings down there, say, we just have no money, we have no businesses, we have no income. So we've got pot shops, at least four pot shops at Mount Shasta because we have no business. But you expand the ski area, we will have more business. More people will come, more industry will come, more things will come simply because People can enjoy skiing. It's a tremendous family activity. When I'm up there, I see so many families with all the little kids and talk to them and say, how come you're here? Well, just wanted to enjoy the weekend with the family. So it's a tremendous thing. By the way, on the Highway 89 situation, I was talking with a Caltrans supervisor. Apparently, Caltrans has so much money right now, they don't know what to do with it. Well, here's a perfect thing to do with it, is take care of their problem across the highway. I could kind of go on and on and on, but I hope your vote is a yes on this, because we desperately need it. These guys have stuck their necks out spending money for years on a ski area that's marginal because they haven't expanded up into an area where it's a good, you know, snow zone. So please vote yes on this project.
Thank you. Next commenter is Kim Hine.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Kim Hine. My permanent address is in Anderson, California, but we do have a second home here in Siskiyou County, Mount Shasta. Thank you for bringing this back to light and doing this for the ski park. I've been in the Reading area for 20 years and been buying ski park passes for those 20 years. My husband and I were hard workers. We've always thought one day we aspire to buy something in Mount Shasta so that we can have our kids go to the ski park every year and so forth. That dream came true last year for us. Our kids were getting really good at snowboarding and going to the park, and so we decided, you know what, it's the right time, we can afford to do this. So we bought a house, and it's really because of the ski park and everything that they have done and put into the ski park. Again, 20 years of going there, they have done an amazing job of bringing that up to speed, and the parking, everything that they've done in the last year or so has been great. Our kids are now on the Mount Shasta Ski Board team, and it's beautiful. Again, we wouldn't have done that without the ski park being here. We're excited to see you approve this going forward. Again, it will bring tourism. I know it's probably not fun to hear that we have a second home here, but that's if we could live here, we would, but we can't. Thank you for the presentation. I think that was really laid out well. There's really not a lot of negatives for the environmental impacts. So I hope to see a positive in this go through. So thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Oh, so Maura Quinn Brasino. Did I say that right?
Good morning. I'm here representing the 10 members of my family who have skied here for over two decades.
Oh, could you repeat your name?
Maura Quinn Brasino.
Just to make sure I did it. Okay,
sorry
thank you.
About that. Yeah, my family has had ski passes for over 20 years, and our kids have all been raised on that hill. It's just such an important asset to the community. We strongly support and hope that you will, the Great Butte expansion. Not only is it a great recreational asset, it's a wonderful financial asset, bringing economics and money into the county. This expansion will help maintain this valuable resource even in low snow years and enhance the sustainability. So we all support it strongly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Joe Foster.
My name is Joe Foster and I live here in Wairika. I too would like to show my support for the ski park. We too have used it over the years many times. They have been not only is it going to be a help to our community as far as income and increased revenue to most people, but it was a great help to our school. And the kids got to get cheaper passes and lessons that they could go to the park with, and it was a great help to a lot of the different schools. We also had the ski team, and we had the option to race against many of the schools here, which in the last few years, because of the lack of snow, has kind of come to a very small end because there's not much snow to support it. And also, we had one year we had the state finals here, and it was now we don't have them because we don't have enough snow. So I definitely think that we need the to go higher, to get more snow, bring more to the community, and it would also be a great help to the schools, which they have been a very good partner in as far as we are concerned, as far as helping kids get to the park and to learn how to ski. And I would like to say, show my support to the ski park. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Dwight Bailey?
Dwight Bailey, 5906 Castle Avenue, Dunsmuir. I'm also a supporter of this project, but I'd like to start with a question. Why are we here today? Why aren't we skiing the other resort, I guess is the question. I've heard the term avalanche. We always had avalanches at Old Lodge. At one point during my calculus days, we were given a cannon to shoot the avalanche. We dropped a shell within about 30 feet of a tower and they took it away from us. Some very high-skilled individuals on the ski team went up and physically did the maneuvers to allow us to ski that day. Avalanches have always been a problem. But it wasn't the avalanche the reason we're in this room today. The fact was that it took not one, not two, but three congressional sessions, 6 years, because it needed congressional approval to have us reassemble that towers, those set of towers. The fact is that Congress meets every 2 years, so they can procrastinate for 2 years before making a decision, of which they did. They procrastinated another 2 years before, and they stuck it on with a rider. This inimportant thing was stuck on in a rider to carry up things at the end of the congressional session. It failed again. It failed again. The fact that we are on private ownership going back a number of years, by I guess the number of property, that is why we were able to ski the current lodge that we have today. Like I say, avalanches have always been a problem. I like higher skiing. Mount Shasta, the old lodge, we used to be up above Timberline. And we just called it Mount Wind and Ice. If it wasn't windy, it was icy. So I kind of liked those days that we got a little bit of both. I think this will improve the ski area. I am so grateful that we are making a decision in this room, not in Washington, D.C. We have trusted individuals sitting here today that are going to make that decision, and we don't have to rely on people that are willing to kick the can down the road for another 2 years, and another 2 years, and another 2 years, and actually harming the whole entire county. So I support this, and I brought my skis today. Let's go skiing.
Great, thank you. Mariah Iyer.
Good morning, I'm Mariah Ayer, 1435 Air Lane, Mount Shasta, California. I am here in support of the expansion. I am both sad that we're here and elated that we're here. I am a fourth generation family from Siskiyou County. I'm born and raised in Mount Shasta, continue to stay in Mount Shasta, born into a family of entrepreneurs. My dad, who spoke earlier, is Jim, and I have watched this kind of come full circle. I've heard stories all my life about the ski bowl and getting to ski up there. I've watched some of the greats like Carl Martin, who is no longer with us, fight alongside with my dad and many others to try to get more skiing up on the mountain. That's why I'm sad that we're not already there skiing and that I wasn't able to raise my kids skiing up on the mountain. They are still teenagers, and so hopefully with this expansion, I appreciate your consideration of it, and I'm very much for it, and I would love for them to get the opportunity to ski up there and potentially one day raise their kids to be able to ski up there. This expansion will be good for our community, both economically and bring just more people to our community. It'll provide jobs for the people that are already in our community, and I appreciate your consideration again, and I'm absolutely 1,000% for it.
Thank you. Any other public comment for those that didn't provide a card?
Through the chair.
Yeah.
I do have two people raising their hand. One is Ms. Marsh and the other one is Ms. Berdichevsky. She's the lady who just spoke. I can unmute Ms. Marsh at this time if you are ready for online
Yeah, for
comments.
Public. Yeah, Ms. Marsh.
Just a second.
Covering 100%. Hello, this is Ann Marsh. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I have two comments. I totally am not opposed to this project. I do have the question of making this approval prior to the 30-day comment period being closed, even at the Planning Commission level. I don't believe that is appropriate. And the other question is, that Ms. Berdichevsky brought up, what is the level of cultural in, well, with the Indian tribes, the tribes, what is the level of consultation and study? Spelled out very clearly in CEQA, and I really hope that that was done clearly and appropriately. My computer isn't working and I'm unable to open your document. Can't even get on the county website. So I'd appreciate those two items, just technical items, nothing to do with stopping the project or anything, but just following the rules. If we don't stop at this traffic light, you know we're going to have accidents. Thank you.
Okay. And then, we're not allowing everybody to go twice.
I'm sorry?
I said we're not allowing everybody to go twice. I see Ms.
Okay.
Berdichevsky has her hand up. But
all right, I will lower her hand then.
Sorry. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission.
Somebody else want to speak? I can address some of the questions that Michelle brought up. I'm staff, but I'll just...
We'll do that.
Okay, we'll do that with staff. We'll ask questions and come to you, but I appreciate you letting us know you're in the audience. Thank you. So, let's see. So why don't we first, I'd like to hear from you, Ms. Haley, on this 30-day notice and the whole
thing. Sure. Thank you. So as I mentioned during the presentation, we're still within the CEQA 30-day public noticing period. And so I, let's see, in the conditions of approval, refer you to condition 5, which reads, should any additional public comments be received after April 20th, 2022, the additional public comments will be heard and considered by the Board of Supervisors meeting for final approval and adoption. And you know, the reasoning for that condition, obviously, is we want to include all of the public comment. And the way CEQA is written, Planning Commission's, you know, their advisory to the Board of Supervisors. And so this is a draft CEQA document. So the thought is, since the Board is approving the final, they will be considering all of the public comment anyways. And this is still in draft form. So that's the reasoning for that.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions to that?
Thank you for that clarification for the public.
Sure.
Yeah. I suppose...
Because I had the same question.
Sure. One additional technical comment, and believe me, staff discussed this issue. This is not a surprise issue before we did this, and of course staff would, of course, prefer to bring to you all the comments at the close of period. I believe there's timings with the project that are of some concern. Technically, under the California Code of Regulations, all comments must be considered by, quote, the decision-making body. And sometimes the Planning Commission sits as that body, sometimes they're the recommending body. Here you're the recommending body. So technically, under the rules, it seems fine, although I don't think it's preferable, to go forward with the comment period. Also, our office did a look around, and other jurisdictions, does seem that other planning commissions have faced this sort of issue where they're hearing the project before the close of public comment. So hanging our hats on the technicality of the wording of the California Code of Regulations that you're not the decision-making body, that it has been done elsewhere, and that we are do understand the concerns and would prefer to proceed otherwise, but it seems we are able to proceed now.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think that addresses that. So on to, I'll start with a few questions. I know you wanted to talk about the vehicle stuff, so I'll let you, we probably have the same questions, I'm sure, so I'll let you talk about that. Although I do have some questions on, let's see, there was a question on lights that was brought up. I don't remember seeing anything in my 700-800 pages that I read about lighting on Grayview.
We can bring Jason to discuss that.
Please go message boards. Message boards.
Oh, yeah, no, I was talking the lighting up. Did you want to?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jacob Ewald. I'm a staff biologist with GeoServe. So the office address would be 2731 Friars Way in Mount Shasta. So in regards to lighting, as I understand it, the Grey Butte ski lift is not designed for night skiing. So there's no proposed lights on the lift. So it will not, and that's of course the closest to, you know, the cultural sites such as Panther Meadows and Mount Shasta in general, the mountain. So that would not be an issue, as I understand it. In terms of lighting at the vault toilet, I don't believe there is any lighting planned there, nor at the warming huts that are proposed. But I don't, as I read through everything, as we compiled everything, I don't see any proposed lighting.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I guess so.
Can we take 5 minutes?
Yeah. Can we break for 5 minutes? Okay.